Imagine the stellar voices of the Austin-based vocal ensemble Conspirare, and then combine them with the delicate, shifting textures of 12 guitars. And not just any guitars, the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, the Texas Guitar Quartet, and the Austin Guitar Quartet. Oh, and let's sprinkle in some cello with Douglas Harvey, too. That's all part of their new recording, The Singing Guitar. It's what you're going to be hearing about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. Well, Craig, let's start off by just talking about how are you? It's been a rough year for everybody. How have you been this past year, you and those that you're closest to?
Thank you. You know, I feel very fortunate, really blessed to be blessed with health and, you know, food and a place to live that's comfortable. I have really been so grateful for that, and meaningful work, actually, too. And then I will say, just like so many of us, I have felt the weight of loss, the weight of all the challenges. Certainly the pandemic has been enormous. I have felt that creatively a lot, you know, very much as a performing conductor, missing that very, very much. I've not been live on a podium since February of 2020. And then, of course, all the new learning, too, with the virtual things. We've done a good number of creative virtual projects, and that's been very exciting and stimulating in many ways, but also quite demanding. And, you know, it's a whole new basket of skill sets needed. And so, you know, generally doing really well right now and with a lot of hope for, I like to say, this new world that we need to create with a whole lot of depth and breadth of consideration as what it means to be human and what it means to be a part of a human family. You know, I'm hoping that everything we do moving forward can be influenced and shaped and inspired by what we have been coming through together, and to also acknowledge the losses. Yeah.
How have you been able to keep your ensemble, Conspirare, energized and connected during the pandemic?
Yeah. Well, one of the commitments we made internally early on was that, you know, kind of an agreement. One, there's so much we don't know, but what we do know and commit to is that we want to continue to engage our artists somehow. In the intensity of the world situation with the pandemic, too, we thought, well, creativity does not have to be lost. What does it mean to use our creative imaginations and to express within this time? So, you know, we've done all kinds of things to try and stay tethered since most of our singers come from across the country. We did regular Zoom sessions at least once a month to try and get together and be with each other, sometimes just to look at each other's faces and kind of virtually hug and share jokes or tears or challenges. And then we have also tried to really engage artists literally in these virtual projects. And so, you know, who knew we were going to have all of our dear, wonderful artists in front of so many green screens, you know, this year, and setting up microphones and stands with their iPhones and going through all these editing processes with them. So we've wanted to just somehow stay committed to whatever that deepest, lowest common denominator is of, we're not going to lose connection with each other. We're still going to try and make art somehow. And, you know, we've learned a lot, we've made mistakes, but we have, I think, stayed with each other. Yeah.
I'm curious what you might have discovered about yourself this past year during the pandemic that maybe has surprised you.
Maybe a fun surprise is just how much I love home and being home. I kind of knew it, but I didn't know the extent of just kind of, I don't know, I think of even laying down on the front yard at our house, just feeling the earth under me and being with my partner and our dog and just being in a neighborhood. I have loved that. You know, I have really been learning a lot about my need for space, I think, kind of spaciousness as a human, but as a creative too. So much of this work that we do is public work, but I do have a huge introvert side. And so I need it for that, but I also just need it to contemplate and, you know, I think doing less and going deeper with it, with the work, feels really appealing to me right now.
And will you remind us where home is for you?
Yeah, I'm calling home in Austin, Texas, just down I-35, a few miles from Minnesota. Oh, I'm literally three blocks from I-35, so I do feel like I'm kind of connected with the umbilical cord.
Which is where you're from originally, we should remind everyone. Born and raised in Minnesota.
Absolutely.
Your newest project is called The Singing Guitar with your ensemble, Conspirare. And it was created actually before the pandemic. So tell me a little bit about how this project evolved.
Well, it started, I think, back 2012, 2013-ish. There were conversations about a big project of some kind that would be novel, new. And we were working with Texas Performing Arts and a group called Austin Classical Guitar. Beautiful organizations here in Austin, Central Texas. And I threw out the idea of just playing with textures initially and thinking about St. Mark's in Venice and those polychoral works, those antiphonal choirs across the balconies and choirs of voices and choirs of brass. And I just threw out an idea about what about choirs of voices and choirs of guitars? And everyone in the room liked the idea. And I think it did sound really cool. I will sort of fast forward past a lot of conversation to say it got reduced down from choirs of guitars, like big groups of guitars, to three guitar quartets and a piece that we would commission by Nico Muhly. We weren't sure if he'd, you know, jump at this. We were very interested in Nico doing this, and he was very interested. So he took the dance with us, and we created a work called How Little You Are, for three guitar quartets and choir and a soprano soloist. And so we had the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, you know, of world renown, also the fantastic Dublin Guitar Quartet at the premiere, and then the Texas Guitar Quartet, a superb quartet. So these three guitar quartets coming together to form their own ensemble, really. So that's how this project started. Nico had chosen to write vocal music to the text of these 19th century pioneer women. These were women who were writing essays or writing in their journals, extraordinary collection of texts he put together for their sort of both profundity and their ordinariness, and describing a broad spectrum of life on the prairie. These were women who were sort of running the home base as, you know, kind of their husbands were off conquering, you know, in a sense. And so dealing with elements of the natural world, I mean, the weather, the landscape, sometimes the beautiful spaciousness of, you know, the title is How Little You Are. There's a sense of the grandeur of being out in this open space. And, you know, one of the lines, one recognizes how little you are in the vastness, but also about loss of an infant, the challenges of sickness out there, the basics of making coffee over a fire. You know, it's a really lovely text. And the guitar was central to all of this. And the meaning and the kind of essential emotional colors of the guitar, what does it mean? You know, we think of guitar and voice, and even the guitar having a voice so often being the voice of lament, very popular in folk traditions, of course. In Texas, it's kind of, you know, the native instrument. It's so all of this kind of came together to form the project. And then it grew after the premiere to add this piece by Kyle Smith, which we commissioned, called The Dawn's Early Light. And then an extraordinary piece called When the Guitar by Irina Esmail. And then I wrote a small piece, the only piece on the project with no guitar, just cello. So, but that's how it all got started.
I'm going to dive into each of these pieces individually so we can talk more about them. First, though, I want to talk about Conspirare and one of your major goals, which is to commission and perform works that represent equality and justice. And this recording is a perfect example of that, focusing on the stories and the struggles of women, in particular Native American women. Tell me a little bit about why this project was so important.
Yeah. Well, we went to Kyle Smith, the composer, Philadelphia-based, and he has written so many extraordinary works for choir, and I love Kyle and his music, and asked if he would write this just for single guitar quartet. But one of the things, I was very specific, it was, could you write a piece that really represents a different voice, a different tradition? It was fascinating, first of all, that Nico's piece represented women's voices from that time of, you know, the American pioneer. But those women's voices also represented only sort of that one tradition, if you will. And we think, and I especially said, if there's any way we could ground this piece you're doing, Kyle, in Native American texts, would be extraordinarily important. And if possible, a woman from a Native American tradition. So we had lots of conversations. He really dug and dug and explored a lot and came up eventually with these texts and stories by Sarah Winnemucca, who, to our understanding, is the first Native American woman to be published in English. And so this felt like a very balancing piece. It was very important to us just to not representing sort of the conquering side of these, you know, lands that had been taken. You know, whether someone knows that in the listening experience or not, it feels like it's of importance to us, the creators of this experience. And then Rena Esmail's piece represents yet another sort of tradition. I mean, she's Indian, as in India, the nation, and American, and brings in a whole other array of stylistic and voices. Her own voice certainly is distinct and profound. But by bringing in this Persian text by Hafiz, the 13th century mystic poet, and these fantastically alive translations by Daniel Ladinsky, there's yet another perspective. So this was a bit of what we were going for.
Rena Esmail's piece is titled When the Guitar, and it features the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet. And she says that this piece is about that first moment of trust. How is that reflected in the music?
The poem itself speaks of forgiveness. And when she speaks of trust, it is that moment of knowing that the trust comes when there's an openness and a readiness to forgive. Certain mystic wisdom traditions speak about that forgiveness is all. And so in this context, a more specific way, forgiveness is the sort of the soil that trust can be born from. I like when she had said once, this is about the power of music to show us who we are. Like a guitar, each of us is a unique, complex, resonant body. And when we heal, we resonate differently than when we are broken. Music reverberates through each of us, showing us our own portrait in sound. And so this is that. In a sense, it points towards the reverberation one feels in healing. It used to be called, actually, When the Violin, because the original poem referenced a violin. So we just asked her, we both asked Rena if she could consider this, and then we asked Daniel Ladinsky if he would be open to us making a shift to When the Guitar, and all parties were a big yes. Yes, they're string instruments, they're resonating bodies, go for it.
There is a line in the text of that piece When the guitar can forgive the past, it starts singing. And I wondered, is that where the title of this recording comes from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in part, yes. It actually was a perfect alignment about something we had been talking about a lot with the title of this project. Is the way it ties in so beautifully is, in this course, she speaks of the guitar as a body. And of course, symbolically, it references us, each one of us, you and me and everyone listening, as a resonating body. And so we loved then thinking about the guitar as representing the singing guitar. First of all, we know that the guitar has a voice, a real singing voice. Anyone who really loves guitar knows that it has the capacity to truly sing. And then, of course, so much great vocal music is written with guitar. So there are the literal references. But very much like this idea of the resonating body that is each of us, that we is expressed by the guitar. So the guitar expresses a spectrum of emotions that are human emotions. And yeah, so we just ended up loving everything about it when a title just sits and Rena's piece kind of closed the deal for us.
Nico Muley's piece, How Little You Are, tells the struggles of two pioneer women in the 19th century. Tell me about these two women. I know that they have specific names, and what do we learn about them through this piece?
They are women from Texas and Wyoming. So we love that reference to the American West, of course, but also the American Southwest, where these works were premiered and conceived. And they really speak to, again, the sort of a sense of the ordinariness of the days. So at first read, and when I first saw the texts, frankly, I was like, these feel like journal entries, sort of talking about making coffee over the fire and breakfasting. And then all of a sudden was a shift in the next movement to the woman telling about her husband needing to make the coffin for their little infant child who died out on the prairie because the circumstances were so challenging. And then next, you know, so it's ordinary, ordinary, ordinary blasts of spring, the springtime freshness, what a sense of renewal that was. And then in the fourth large movement, the solo soprano movement, is when all of a sudden this ordinariness becomes an observation of the night sky, this vast universe, in the center of which we feel how little you are, and that in that sensing our smallness, we have a sense of a deeper grandeur of the divine, of the sense of God and a presence. So their voices are both very practical, and one feels their strength in all that they were doing to sort of manage these households and perhaps these homesteads and, you know, deal with the natural elements, deal with the cold, deal with the hunger and the frozen water when the children need water and all of the aspects. And it's also very atmospheric music. You know, they write about landscapes in ways that are very evocative, but also feel quite plain spoken. And so I love sort of this combination of ordinariness with a larger universal sort of reflectiveness and reflection. I love for people to hear this work in performance the way that I really wish they could hear it. If we could make our performance spaces small enough, is for all of the singers and guitarists to surround the listeners. I think much of this music, the overall initial effect, I think sometimes partly because of the musical language, but also because of this quality of these 12 guitars, it creates a space, a realm, an atmosphere where it's sometimes hard to know where to place your attention. And so when you don't know exactly where to place your attention, you're left with this sense of more that spaciousness that you feel is meditative. So in that way, I think that's a little bit what he references. And my dream for this piece, and we're actually working to try and achieve this goal, is I want to have kind of a quiet, almost private listening room created in museums and in galleries that might have some images. They might be literal or they might be more just abstract, but literally a comfortable something like a beanbag chair, or a really great comfortable chair that one could sit in, be there for the 45 minutes and either have state-of-the-art fabulous speakers or beautiful headphones, but just that you're surrounded in the sound is the way that I want people to experience this. So we're kind of chipping away at that possibility, talking to some galleries and some people to present. So I want people to experience this in a surround sound kind of way.
I want to talk a little bit about the soprano soloist, Estelí Gómez. Who is she representing in the section where she is featured, which I believe is the title track from this piece?
Yes, it is. That's a beautiful question, Julian. I think I'd like to set up a graduate seminar for a semester to talk about it. And I love that movement so much. Nico writes this solo, which is really a tightrope walk for a soprano. In a number of the sopranos were looking at it saying, I'm so glad Estelí's doing this, because she has to go from one octave and leap up to another. And it's a huge leap, but she needs to do it in a way that feels linear, that doesn't feel like she's making the leap. So it needs to be quite legato and sort of mellifluous, even though it has these huge expanses. Yeah, I think she's representing the human being in the middle of this vastness, standing alone under a night sky, suddenly having this aha awareness of, look at me, how tiny I am. So even in the writing, he's showing this large vastness, these huge spaces. He sets these three guitar quartets sort of rhythmically against each other. Even the guitars, one is playing straight quarters in this 4-4, another one is playing quintuplets in against that four straight four quarter notes, someone else is playing six, another is just offset by an eighth. I used to say that movement initially sounds like these kind of golden toothpicks falling on the floor, just do, all pitched. And so it's like, where do you place yourself? Where do you place your foot down in this? I mean, I as a conductor knew exactly where the beat was because I needed to for them all to find it. And yet, so I felt kind of lucky that way. But when I listen, not as a conductor, as if I didn't know the score, it's like, whoosh, where are we? And so then the end, about a third of the way into this very long introduction of sort of the unknowingness, the vast sky, enters this soprano. As the tiny little human, both realizing her smallness and at the same time connecting with the grandeur and not feeling alone, feeling a sense of the divine. You know, it's as if God, the divine, is the totality of all this, even as I feel tremendously small. And so that's, I guess, my first entry point. I could say a lot more, but I think in this context, I won't go on because we'll go do that in the graduate seminar. But it's a beautiful question. I'm so grateful for it.
Now, that's very interesting, the way you just responded to that question, because I know when you are on stage, you often will say something to your musicians like, it would be a gift if you could. Tell me how you learned that approach, because it really does help you bring out the best in your musicians.
You know, I think one thing is just a basic, deep respect for colleagues making music, you know. That's one of the places that I really practice my respect for just fellow humans is, and especially in that context, respect for these fellow musicians who have so much talent and so much experience and a depth of training and insight. So it's just, it's a more an invitation. But, you know, when you said it, what it reminded me of was my wonderful dear teacher, Helmut Rilling, from Germany. It's related to something he was so wonderful at cultivating. He would say, and I'd hear him in rehearsals, but he would say this is a very intentional thing, working with so many musicians, so many different professional orchestras, and you meet all kinds of personalities in those big collectives and all kinds of strong egos with strong opinions, many of them who don't really want to be conducted by anyone. But I just watched him work magic with that little German word, vielleicht. He would say, perhaps, you know, perhaps could you play that a little shorter? Perhaps mezzo forte rather than, you know, it was just the lightest little touch that showed a space that wasn't demanding. This is not about control of other musicians. This is about support of them. And so I think, you know, I was really fortunate to have great teachers who modeled that. And then I think it was also related to just my own temperament and my own kind of values that I love, even with my own conducting students, I tell them, how can you get to a posture where the podium is not about attempting control at anything, but rather it is support. Support to bring out the best in every player and every musician, that what we're collecting around is our principles of pulse, principles that are built into the music that we all aspire to. But the second it becomes about a personality making demands from the podium, it makes it so small. And I'd rather make it about the large, yeah.
And then we get back to the title of the piece.
There you go. Nice tie-in.
Kyle Smith's piece is called The Dawn's Early Light, and it takes a look at our national anthem in the writings of a Native American woman, Sarah Winnemucca. What do we learn about her or from her in this piece?
Well, she was telling a story. And so what we learn about Sarah, first of all, we learn about her sort of personhood, you know, how she grew up. We learn about the atrocities she lived through. About about some of her lineage. She speaks about a grandfather. Speaks about members of the tribe and the relationship they had with sort of the government officials. But all of what she lived through leads up to this song that we call our national anthem. She relates the story to us, and we see this anthem through her eyes. And so we come away from this new hearing. We're not only challenged by the new hearing, but we're inspired. And we really come to see her as this beautiful soul, representing a kind of beauty and innocence prior to all of the stories of factions, of tribes. You know, she was taught certain values, and then she saw how those values conflict with sometimes, often men's, especially, you know, quest for power or for identity, yeah, and alignment with tribe, you know, and of course we're dealing with that today so intensely. So, yeah, I think we learned some beautiful things about her. We kind of come to see her as quite an extraordinary character who's a great storyteller too, yeah, much to offer us.
She learned about the Star-Spangled Banner from her grandfather, the tribal chief. What's surprising about that?
It was as if it was passed down to them as one of their own songs. You know, this is fascinating. And she had stories of real connection with it, not connected with defense of any other institution or any American. Yeah, so it's very surprising to think of, you know, how she learned this as a girl. It's much, you know, it's similar. I remember I related to my own experience of meeting folks from the Choctaw Nation. We met them in Oklahoma, a whole gathering of them, and this was many years ago. And I was just shocked to hear them sing so many Christian hymns. And, you know, they were referencing at that time how they had learned these hymns. They told us, of course, their own personal stories of the Trail of Tears in this country, of sort of the Native American journeys. There was this intermixing of all kinds of songs, and that these songs, these Christian hymns in their case, became a part of their own culture then. They often had very different experiences, different associations, but Sarah's associations with the national anthem were affectionate, were tender. And then later she sort of came to view this in a very different way, and I won't give away the story so people can listen. But it's very touching, really. And it does, when we sang it as a choir, it's after having really considered all the layers of what Sarah's story told us. And we kind of sang this national anthem in a very impassioned way, kind of feeling into it more deeply than we might have before. So, and I hope people will hear that in the singing.
The recording closes out with a piece that you wrote, The Song That I Came to Sing, and it features cello, just cello, with the choir. How does this song reflect the ideas that are similar to the texts set by Nico Muhly and Kyle Smith?
Well, and your question is beautiful. It reflects what my intention was. This piece of mine is short. It's less than 2.5 minutes long. It's just for treble voices and cello, but it's at the end of the CD, but it was at the beginning of the concert when we did a live performance of it. And so it was kind of pre-guitar in the concert journey. And it was really meant to express, well, specifically the text by Rabindranath Tagore. Tagore is an extraordinary Bengali poet, philosopher, artist, creator of all sorts, just a beautiful Renaissance being. And the song that I came to sing is yet unsung, is yet unfulfilled. There's a sense of this unfulfilled expression that is felt in the sort of person of the song, who's the person who's singing it, the poem. And I felt that throughout the texts of the women writers whose texts are represented in Kyle's piece, in Nico's piece. And that was what I was really pointing towards. And then, you know, to a broader extent, even the sense of each one of us, you know, whose song goes unfulfilled, the yearning for that, in a way, it's that song, that yearning to express from our deepest place that motivates us forward in life. Sometimes we avoid it throughout our lives, you know, and that's quite common. So the sense of unfulfilledness, a sense of yearning to set up those pieces was my intention. And it's written a little bit chant-like in the treble voices for that very reason, to sort of indicate that ancient yearning that so many have felt across the centuries, across millennia. You know, who are we? What is our purpose here? How does one even contemplate fulfilling one's song?
Craig Halle-Johnson talking about the new recording, The Singing Guitar, with Conspirare and three guitar quartets. Thanks to Valerie Kaler, the producer of New Classical Tracks. Since you're clearly a music fan, let me tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, the Piano Puzzler Podcast, where every week host Fred Child invites composer Bruce Adolph into the studio to play one of his brilliant musical mind games. Bruce takes a familiar tune and disguises it in the style of a classical composer, and then a contestant calls in to try to solve the riddle. If it sounds like fun to you, subscribe to the Piano Puzzler wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.